Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and the fastest growing, even the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are all counterproductive, and that none of them can be fixed. And that's particularly important today that it's an election day, at least here in the United States. I understand that particularly in the archive listens to this program, most of you live elsewhere, down under, whether it be in Australia or in New Zealand, or scattered across the continent of Europe. But here it is, election day, and I will tell you that I actually did vote today. And for those of you who says, what a hypocrite, he says, you should not vote. There's nobody to vote for, and you went off and voted. Well, there is a reason to voting. Many of you know that I have been bicoastal for a while. I'm trying to sell a house in California that we only bought in support of our youngest son, and now that he has moved on, there's no reason to own it. We have a farm in Virginia. My wife is the farm manager. Because of the drought, I've had to stay out in California to keep that place alive while we try to sell it. And my wife is back here as the farm manager over the employees. It's not as much fun being married when you're 2,500 miles apart as it is being together. So I'm going to let the realtors have the West Coast property, move back here more full-time. And the reason I voted is I'm still a Virginia resident, and they sometimes use voting records to establish residency. I did not vote for either of the two-party candidates. I in both the senatorial race and the congressional race. I voted for the Libertarian, which is essentially saying I vote for the government as it is not and as it should be, which is to be a fraction of what it currently is. And there was one amendment. The amendment was to amend the state constitution to allow property tax abatement for the widows of servicemen who are killed. And I voted no. I do not want us to have a military, much less to reward those who choose to engage in the military. So I did vote. It was principally just to establish residency here in Virginia, particularly now that I'm going to try to spend most of my time here. There's a story in the that was in the Washington Post as I arrived. This is the second most important story in the Post. The most important story with the large picture was a picture of RG3. Scott, you probably saw him play your team there in Minnesota, the Washington Redskins. I hate that name. But the Washington football team played the Minnesota Vikings. I had no issue calling the team Vikings. RG3 started off well on his return from his ankle injury, but played very poorly in the second half and particularly at the end of the game. And after Washington had won three games in a row, two based upon the play of Colt McCoy, one famously on Monday Night Football against the Cowboys in Colt McCoy's return to Texas, they brought RG3 back because Dan Snyder likes the publicity of RG3. And he laid an egg.
Yeah, big time. I think the Redskins are actually the better team. I feel like they are.
Which is not saying much for Minnesota because the Redskins don't have a defense.
Well, our best player is in a court case right now. So
this is true because he took a switch to his child, and they talk about that he may plea child abuse
class A
case against him
is what he's going to take instead of the felony. Is what it sounds like.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, based upon taking a switch to a child who is misbehaving, and his child was clearly misbehaving. He was trying when I was growing up, I was spanked with a switch, which is a tree branch, you know, a thin tree branch that has some spring to it. So it wraps around your legs when you're spanked. Or if it's on your bottom, it wraps around and hits a more tender area. And, you know, it hurts like hell. There's no question about it. And leave welts. And he was probably spanked with that, although he's a little young probably to have grown up in that period. Yeah. You know, I'm obviously much older than he is, and even though I was hit with that sort of thing, the brief period that I spanked my children, and it was extraordinarily brief, it was only with an open flat hand on the bottom, and during the period they were in diapers and wearing diapers, and so it probably hurt my hand more than it hurt their bottom. And I think I've told this story. The reason that I stopped spanking them, I might have spanked both of them four or five times, is the full extent of it. One swat on the bottom makes more noise on a diapered bottom than anything else, because, you know, those diapers now are all plastic. And it was my eldest son had hit my younger son, and I swatted him on the bottom and said, you know, you cannot hit your son, or you hit your brother. And he just turned to me just as calmly as he could, and he says, then why did you hit me? I did not have a good answer for that.
Game over.
Game over, you know, game over. I didn't have a good answer, and so it was game over. That was the last time that I spanked him. You know, at the time, his brother was one and he was two. So, anyway, that's the story is that the big story is RG3 and the football team. But off to the right, the top headline is major setback for U.S. and Syria. And I'd like to read some of what the Washington Post wrote, because much of it is accurate, and much of it is what I had predicted would occur. I told everyone who would listen that the Obaminator's decision to go after the Islamic State would start off as a failure. We'd accomplish nothing. And that it would quickly turn to being counterproductive. We would end up increasing the ranks of the Islamic State, and the Islamic State would come out of the experience far better armed and in far larger numbers and more unified than they went into the experience. So the very thing that we were trying to do, all three things, to deprive them of their arms, to deprive them of their soldiers, their jihadists, and to deprive them of their popularity, those three things that we are attempting to do, because the Islamic State is clearly bad, that they would be counterproductive. We would increase their popularity, increase the amount of armaments under their control, and increase the number of jihadists. That I said all of that's going to happen, and that's what this article affirms, that all of that is happening. Now, just because an organization is horrible does not mean that you should attack it. You know, there's lots of horrible things that are best left alone. You know, for example, I have been in situations on property where there are hornet's nests in trees. And I have found that you're better off giving the hornet's nest a wide berth and ignoring them and staying away from them than you are going and swatting the hornet's nest. It's a really dumb thing to do. There are lots of things like that. Ebola is one of them. When somebody has Ebola, you're better off keeping your distance from them than you are trying to deal with them. And so America's decision to arm Muslims, to go off and attack Muslims, to invade Muslim countries, to try to establish Western ideals amongst Muslims, is asinine. It's just counterproductive, will never work, and it is indeed counterproductive. That's what this article says. So a major setback for U.S. in Syria. Extremists rout moderate rebels. Well, there are no such thing as extremists. There's only Muslims. There's no such thing as a radical Muslim or an extremist Muslim. They're just Muslims. And just as there are no extremists, there are no moderates. There are no shades of Islam. You're either a good Muslim or a bad Muslim. That's, you can use those terms. A good Muslim is a jihadist. 100% of good Muslims are bad people. Or you can be a bad Muslim, and you can be peaceful, you can be a good person, but as a bad Muslim, you're not a Muslim. You may call yourself that, but your life is not guided by the Quran, and it is not, you're not following Muhammad's orders or example. You are therefore a hypocrite. You're pretending to be something that you're really not. So it's possible to be a decent, peaceful person, referring to yourself as a Muslim if you're a really lousy Muslim. But if you're a good Muslim, if you are following the edicts in the Quran, following Muhammad's words and deeds as the Quran orders you to do so, then you're a jihadist. Then you're a miserable, horrible person. So there's good and bad Muslim, with bad Muslim not being really a Muslim, being a hypocrite. And all good Muslims are bad people. This is the story. Beirut. The Obama administration's Syria strategy suffered a major setback Sunday after fighters linked to Al-Qaeda routed U.S. rebels from their main northern strongholds, capturing significant quantities of weaponry, triggering widespread defections, and ending hopes that Washington will find Syrian partners in its war against the Islamic State. Moderate rebels, no such thing. I mean, just think of the concept of being a rebel. You know, as a rebel, you are a revolutionary. As a rebel, you are a militant. I mean, you cannot be a rebel without being a revolutionary and a militant. And in Islam, you're a jihadist. So this idea that there can be a moderate revolutionary, a moderate militant, or a peaceful militant. I mean, yeah, we're using terms for which, even if you did not know anything about Islam, are absurd. Even in a political context or a military context, the terms we're using are ludicrous. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. So this is the top story in the Washington Post, major setbacks for U.S. in Syria. And it is, the subheadline is extremist rout moderate rebels. And we're just talking about the nomenclature. You know, words are all we have to communicate. We think with words. We communicate with words. We learn with words. We establish our perspective on life with words. Literally everything that has value in our lives revolves around words. So when I make a big deal about words, understand it's not to be pedantic. It's because there is nothing else that matters. And if we do not use words correctly, if we use words erroneously, then there's no way to have a sound, rational understanding. Your perspective will always be jaundiced if your vocabulary is inaccurate. And so this idea of extremists dealing with the Islamic State, and therefore they're dealing with extremist Muslims, is nonsensical. No, the jihadists, the Islamic State, and similar mujahideen jihadists are all fundamentalists. They're not out on the extreme of Islam. They're in the heart of Islam. They're right center aisle of Islam. They are as close to Muhammad as anyone on earth. So when the Islamic State is engaged in torture, as the news was this morning, when the Islamic State is engaged in mass murder, as the news was this morning, when the Islamic State is involved in acts of terrorism, which was part of the news this morning, when they're involved in enforcing Sharia law, which is Islamic law, they aren't being extremists. They're being fundamentalists. And to be a fundamentalist means they're right in the core of what it means to be a Muslim. They are following the only example that Islam has, Muhammad's. And so this idea of calling them extremists is the antithesis of who they are. It's not only wrong, it's the opposite of right. It's really not just a shade of wrong. It's completely wrong. And then to speak of moderate rebels is equally stupid. If you are a rebel, engage militarily to overthrow a religious or political entity, then you are a revolutionary. Revolutionaries are never moderate. You're never going, in your entire life, you will never find a moderate revolutionary. Nor will you ever find a peaceful rebel. Rebels are militants. And that's like saying a peaceful militant. Impossible. Now, it's impossible even apart from Islam. And within Islam, it's doubly so. So that is our problem with the nomenclature. Anyway, the article reads, the Obama administration's Syria strategy suffered a major setback after fighters linked to al-Qaeda, and al-Nusra is linked to al-Qaeda, but that link is meaningless. When Liz Sly wrote to this story, what she was saying here is irrelevant. I mean, this is her opening sentence, and it's irrelevant. The only thing about al-Nusra that has merit is that al-Nusra is a fundamentalist Islamic organization. They were the principal recipient of American and Qatari weapon systems and were the most successful at countering Assad until the Awakening Program Sunni leadership joined with the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, and when that merger occurred, they became much more popular, much more powerful, much more effective than al-Nusra. And since that time, the majority of al-Nusra fighters have joined the Islamic State. And so that background is useful in talking about al-Nusra. To say al-Nusra is linked to al-Qaeda is absolutely meaningless. It gives you no insight whatsoever as to what they're like, how they came into being. They didn't come into being by al-Qaeda establishing them. The only thing that they have with al-Qaeda is that Ayman al-Zawahiri has spoken favorably of them. That's it. And al-Qaeda's Zayman al-Zawahiri is nothing but a feeble old man hiding out someplace in Pakistan with absolutely no followers, no army, no weapons, no land under his control. He has nothing going for him anymore. And so that association is paper thin, razor thin, and utterly and completely meaningless. Anyway, they routed the U.S.-backed rebels from their main northern strongholds. Well, this is to infer that the U.S. was backing moderate rebels, of which, as an oxymoron, there cannot be. Anyway, they did capture all of the American weapons systems, just as the Islamic State captured the weapon systems that we airlifted in for the Kurds. We're arming our enemy and doing so while we're trying to bomb them. This is stupid. So this article from the Washington Post says that not only did the moderate rebels, of which there aren't any, so who knows who these individuals are that America supplied weapons to, surrender to the Islamic State, but all of the American weapons were confiscated by them. So we have armed the Islamic State so that we can go and bomb the Islamic State. So this does say that they captured significant quantities of weaponry, triggering widespread defections and ending hopes that Washington will readily find Syrian partners in its war against the Islamic State. The first issue is that the majority of the jihadists that were engaged fighting Assad were not Syrians. They came from all over the Muslim world and really all over the world. Well, there are tens of thousands of them that came from countries that are not predominantly Islamic, right? The thousands from the United States, tens of thousands from Europe. The majority of them came from Islamic states. They came from Libya. They came from Egypt. They came from Tunisia. They've come from Sudan and Somalia, from Yemen, from Turkey, from all over. And those who decided that they would play jihadist, who would participate in the Mujahideen, the initial rallying cry wasn't political liberty. Never was. That was played in the United States, but that's not what they were using to recruit to jihadists. The recruitment message was, come and help us establish, reestablish the Islamic caliphate and to reunite the Islamic world. And that, for them, wasn't by overthrowing a secular dictator like Assad. It was by going to war against Shia Islam. Shia Muslims represents 20% of Muslims, 90% of Muslims, or 80% of Muslims are Sunni. And so the recruitment was by Sunni Muslims to overthrow and eliminate Shia Islam. And after America's invasion of Iraq, Syria became a client of Iran, just as Iraq is now a client state of Iran. And Iraq and Syria, while they have divided Sunni Shia populations, in Iran, if you're openly Sunni, you're dead. So Iran is almost exclusively Shia. And so this is really a proxy war against Iran, is what's taking place in Iraq. It's Shia via Sunni. And that was the war cry that brought these jihadists there. They did not come to oust a dictator. And so they're there to establish a Sunni Islamic caliphate. Therefore, there never were any moderate Syrians to engage in the overthrow of Assad. And beyond that, there is no Muslim in his right mind that is going to battle the Islamic State unless you are the Kurds, and for generations you have been oppressed, and that you see the United States as someone easy to fool into giving you weapons and to engaging in war on your behalf so that you have a chance to carve out a niche for yourself. And their niche right now is in northern Iraq, but against the U.S.'s wishes. They're not an independent state there. The United States does not recognize them. They don't want them to be independent. But they view themselves as an independent state, and now they're very well armed in a tiny sliver in the northernmost part of Iraq. But most of the Kurds live in eastern Turkey and in southern and southeastern Turkey. And now we are arming them. And they will use those arms to carve out an enclave for themselves in Turkey. And the Turks won't stand for it, just as the Iraqis didn't stand for it, just as the Iranians won't stand for it. And ultimately, all of those weapons are just going to encourage the state-sponsored oppressors of the Kurds, Turkey, Iraq, and Iran, to go after them. There's only one place where the Kurds lived in relative freedom, and that was Syria. And that's no longer the case. So the Kurds have been willing to do so, but the Kurds are not moderates. Right? The Kurds have always grouped together with the PKK, which is a Islamic terrorist organization. The very Mujahideen that we're arming, the Peshmerga, means to embrace death. They're suicidal jihadists. So, and they are not and have never been at war with Assad. Assad was the most accommodating dictator vis-a-vis the Kurds. So they're not against Assad, and they're only against the Islamic State when the Islamic State attacks them. And for the most part, the Islamic State would prefer just to leave them alone. You know, the Islamic State wants to set up control in areas where the majority of the population are Sunni Muslims. They only fight the Shiite Muslims to gain control of the Sunni Islamic areas where they set up their caliphate. So Jordan's at risk. To some degree, Saudi Arabia is at risk. But the Kurds, not so much. And the Shiites, the only places where you're going to find significant battles between the Islamic State and Shiite Muslims are in places where Shiites are a minority and the Sunnis are the majority. Otherwise, they're just going to attack the Shias and Shia majority areas for the purpose of weakening them and keeping them from striking back. So that's what's at play here. This is Sunni via Shia, has always been, will continue to be. There is no moderate or extremist position here that one can support or get behind. There's no political aspect to any of this. It is purely religious. It's purely Sunni via Shia. And that's the only thing you can be talking about here. There's nothing else to discuss. So this author of this story by the Washington Post, Liz Shai, evidently is completely ignorant of what's occurring in Syria, of what's occurring in Iraq, as are most journalists, as are most politicians, as is almost everyone in the military. And so all we're doing is not just kicking the hornet's nest. We're supplying, we're quadrupling the size, the number of hornets, and whatever it is that hornets eat to increase the venom in their sting, we're supplying it. This continues to say, moderate rebels who have been armed and trained by the United States either surrendered or defected to the extremists as Jabhat al-Nusra's group, affiliated with al-Qaeda, swept through the towns and villages the moderates controlled in the northern province of Idlib, in what appeared to be a concerted push to vanquish the moderate Free Syrian Army, according to rebel commanders and activists and analysts. Well, I want to tell you, there are no rebel commanders in Syria that are leading moderate rebels. There are people pretending to be activists, people pretending to be rebel leaders in Turkey that are getting paid by the United States, that are receiving and funneling arms from the United States and are making a fortune pretending to be these things that the press has access to, but they have absolutely no influence on the ground. Also, the United States did something really stupid. The United States, when it announced, when Obamanator announced that he was going to go to war against the Islamic State, the first thing he did after saying the Islamic State was not Islamic, which just proves that he's not an idiot, but that he is completely disingenuous, that he is a grotesque liar, is that he bombed al-Nusra. That first bombing night, the majority of those killed were al-Nusra. And so the Islamic State and al-Nusra said, you know, well, they had fought against one another. That all ended. And al-Nusra looked at the Islamic State and said, sheesh, if the United States is bombing both of us, we might as well join. I mean, that's the enemy, not our fellow Muslims, but the United States. And at that point, the majority of the jihadists and commanders in al-Nusra joined the Islamic State, and most of them are operating now under the Islamic State. There are some who are still operating independently. Now, the only way the ones that are operating independently can stay independent is to coordinate attacks with and work in harmony with the Islamic State. And so for them to capture territory and act like ruthless jihadists endears them to the Islamic State. But we created this mess. We've been arming al-Nusra for 3 or 4 years. They've been our primary recipient of weapons. And now to suggest that they went and attacked the non-existent Free Syrian Army, all we're saying here is that the Washington Post has absolutely no understanding of what's taking place in Syria, nor does the American government. And we are simply providing weapons to the very jihadists that we're attempting to kill with our bombs. Other moderate fighters, the Washington Post article says, and understanding a moderate fighter. That's as stupid as saying a moderate militant. A moderate militant, a moderate fighter. What's a moderate fighter? You know, a guy's, he's armed with surface-to-air missiles. He's armed with anti-tank missiles. He's armed with AK-47s and other assault weapons. Very often they have rocket launchers in the back of pickup trucks. Very often they have 50 caliber machine guns in the back of pickup trucks. You've got somebody like this who is devoting themselves to using the weapons at their disposal. Can you tell me how they could be moderate? What does that mean? Does that mean that rather than putting my AK-47 at full automatic, I'm going to put it at semi-automatic and I'm going to squeeze off 3 rounds at a time as opposed to give you all 20 that are in my clip? Is that what that means? Does that mean that rather than using a hollow point on my .223 ammunition, I'm going to use a full metal jacket, knowing that I'm going to put less grains of powder in the cartridge so that the round travels at a slower speed? That I will prefer the AK-47 over the M16 because the velocity is reduced and the amount of trauma is a square of velocity and a multiple of straight multiple of the mass?
No, it's like using your military for peace.
Yeah, really? when they reclassified the Department of War as the Department of Defense, who in the hell did they think they were defending? It sure as hell not me and you. You can't defend me dropping bombs in Syria. You can't defend me invading Iraq and Afghanistan. You can't defend me invading Korea or invading Vietnam. As a matter of fact, you can't defend me on Iwo Jima. I've got nothing at stake on Iwo Jima. You don't have anything at stake on Iwo Jima. You know, we didn't have anything at stake on the beaches at Normandy. So, the Nazis not only had no ability to hold, to control the areas that they had occupied, and were just a matter of time going to be pushed back, particularly once Hitler made the decision he was going to invade Russia. It was over for him. I mean, the Russians were pouring down his throat, and it was over. That was the moment he made that decision, it was over. We didn't even have to engage in the war for the war to be over. And this idea that we had our freedom was somehow at stake when he had no means to project a force. He had no means to invade, much less occupy America. The Japanese had no interest and no means to invade or occupy America. What in the hell are we doing? And so this whole idea that that weapons and militaries and militias are somehow moderate and peaceful. By moderate rebels, do they mean that, you know, we're going to go off and we're going to kill the really aggressive rebels? That would be the Islamic State. That we're going to, that we're so peaceful and so moderate that we're going to go and fight the really aggressive ones. And we're going to do so passively. And oh, by the way, when we're done fighting, we're just going to lay down our weapons and snooze in our hammocks, because that's just the kind of folks we are. I mean, has anybody even thought this through? When Liz, God bless Liz, wrote this article for the Washington Post, did she bother to think any of that through as to how utterly absurd what she was writing really is? That there's a moderate rebel? And that there are moderate rebels somehow engaged fighting extremist rebels? And that the, that when the more moderate of the extremists, which would be al-Nusra, engage the mythical moderate rebels, the moderate says, hey, how about us join you and we'll become extremists too? And didn't read into that, wait a minute, if the moderates joined the extremists, then how could they have been moderates? Goodness, we're stupid.